You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers for Wednesday, June 27th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, and this is your look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, which still currently have LeBron James on the roster. As always, you can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Locked On Cavaliers, Spotify, too. Today's show is myself and Anthony Irwin from Locked On Lakers and Silver Screen and Roll talking about LeBron's free agency and why this is a boom or bust summer for both the Cavs and the Lakers. We're going to run through this logistical situation where it seems like the Cavs and the Lakers are the two likeliest destinations for LeBron, with one seemingly, if you want to read the Twitter tea leaves, are heading certainly one direction. Tomorrow's show will feature Jeff Siegel from Fear the Sword, Early Bird Rights, all of those great places to talk about the Cavs cap situation and where they're headed in those two directions. But today's show, I think, will be a really good primer for you and free agency. If you want to subscribe to Locked On Cavaliers, you can do so on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, wherever you listen to podcasts, please do so. You can read all of our great coverage at FearTheSword.com and running up through free agency and every rumor, every news post, you're going to find that there. Just so you know, the next podcast after Fridays will be Sunday night at the earliest. We're not going to do a live Saturday into Sunday free agency show. I'll be on a quick trip, but Sunday night, look for that. And anything that happens with the Cavs, you'll get a reaction Sunday night. Maybe earlier if LeBron makes a decision, but guaranteed Sunday night. But here's today's show with myself and Anthony Irwin, and thanks everyone for listening. Anthony, we're covering the two teams and podcasting about the two teams that I think most people out there expect LeBron to go to. That's obviously the Lakers, that's the Cavs. Houston, Philly are the two other teams sort of out there, but those are more complicated situations, and the betting odds would indicate he's going to the Lakers. If you want to read the Twitter tweet tea leaves, it's the Lakers. Cleveland obviously is home for him and his family. And we don't know yet. We're recording this on June 26th. No, there's not been a real indication from him or his actual inner circle about what's going on here, but you were talking about this off podcast, and the one thing to me that is the same for both of the situations is that both teams are very much in this LeBron or bust situation, right? Like, it is for the Cavs, it is, if you don't get LeBron, yes, you just drafted Colin Sexton and they like him, and they have Jetty Osman and Zizic, and they have other guys, young guys. They love Larry Nance. They Rodney Hood could still develop into something interesting. But you will never hit that peak, likely, without LeBron. You don't hit the same levels you've hit as a franchise without LeBron James. For the Lakers, the whole purpose of them is to get back to being the Lakers. The guy in the GIF that's like at the Lakers chain and is mouthing Lakers. It is Magic Johnson saying he's gotta deliver one of these next two summers or he'll resign. Like, it is all in on getting a guy of LeBron's caliber with LeBron and Paul George and LeBron and Kawhi, or all three of them, or whatever, being the goal. Let's start with the Lakers. What do you think it signifies, and is it like a good time for them to just go all in on this? Like, what do you make of like them? Lonzo's young, Kuzma's young, Josh Hart's young, all these guys. They're actually got good young talent. But what does it mean for them to go all in and go boom or bust for guys like LeBron right now?
Well, it's what they've been working to since they hired Magic. Like, they hired Magic for this exact situation. And actually, like, if I was a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, I'd feel just slightly better. I still think, I mean, I'm biased. I'll cop to it. And a lot of the stuff that I'm hearing is saying is pointing me in the direction of predicting that LeBron signs in LA. But if I'm a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, I'm thinking to myself, all right, there's that report that LeBron doesn't want to be wooed. He doesn't want the elaborate pitch meeting. The Lakers hired Magic Johnson for an elaborate pitch meeting. Like, maybe that levels that playing field a little bit more, right? Like, that might be something you could kind of hold on to there. But yeah, like, this, that's why they traded D'Angelo Russell, to get rid of Timofey Mozgov's contract and be able to have enough space for one max contract. That's why they traded away Jordan Clarkson for nothing and Larry Nance Jr., who they really liked, by the way, and who the Cavs and Cavs fans really like in Larry Nance Jr.
I thought you were saying Clarkson. I was like, Anthony, not Clarkson. Anthony, no. Do you even know me? Do you even know me?
No, people really like Larry Nance Jr., but Jordan Clarkson is Jordan. But anywho, but like that's why they've been working to this moment, this offseason, for years now. And if they don't come through, then the move, like getting just imagine trading away. You guys just drafted Colin Sexton, and yes, you drafted him. I think was it eight? You guys drafted him at eight.
Number eight overall. The legacy of the Nets pick is that it ended up being the number eight pick in the draft.
But could you imagine though that? Could you imagine trading away Colin Sexton after his rookie or second season, early on in his career, just to shed, say, like Tristan Thompson's salary? Like, that's terrible value. That's an objectively dumb move.
Well, and it's also just, remember, in that deal, the Cavs did give up a stupid first-round pick that they just didn't need to give up. Yes, Mo Wagner is, you know, like, maybe that was a reach, whatever you want to say, but, like, giving up an asset for that contract, not great. Like, I think it's obviously more egregious for the Lakers to some degree, and yes, they're going all in, but it's weird on both sides.
Well, like what I meant though is that like if let's say, you know, the Cavs were trying to, you know, maybe LeBron's time in LA goes drastically terrible and they get in on the LeBron potential sweepstakes a year from now and they move Sexton with Tristan Thompson's contract to be able to open up the space. And again, complete hypothetical. There's a ton they would need to do. Like, just ignore the CBA for a second. But the Lakers moved a second overall pick just to get rid of a Timofey Mozgov contract to be able to put themselves in this situation right now. So if they don't sign LeBron or if they don't sign anybody, that's a disaster. Like, no matter how you feel about D'Angelo Russell, that's a disaster. And that's what they have going for him. Not to mention the fact that LeBron means that they probably get Paul George too. So they're all in for better or for worse.
So when you look at this late, the young Lakers, the Lonzo, the Kyle Kuzma, the Josh Hart, the Julius Randle and his future, obviously very tied to what happens this summer. If they don't get anybody, and that's like they have the issues with the picks going forward and Brandon Ingram, obviously, you think about that group. If they don't land anyone or they spend money on someone like DeMarcus, who's coming off that Achilles injury, instead of LeBron or Paul George or trading some of those guys for Kawhi. What is it? I mean, I think there's obviously like a rep sting that comes with Pelinka and Magic. I think that hurts them there'll be some Twitter jokes about that. But as a basketball team, like, where does that leave them? Like, are they still in your mind, like, in a healthy place? I mean, yes, like there's lacking assets, but are they in what they've actually got right now? Are they still in a good place?
Yeah, I don't think there's a situation here where the Lakers are completely screwed. Like, it doesn't put Magic and Rob Pelinka in the greatest light, because a lot of the reason why the Lakers aren't completely screwed is because they had all these assets to work with, right? Like, the only thing they've added to this point are Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Thomas Bryant, Mo Wagner, and Svi Mykhailiuk, right? But other than that, and they were able to get off of Jordan Clarkson's contract, but other than that, like, they are where they are because Julius Randle wound up being good. He wound up being a productive player as a number seven pick. Brandon Ingram shows progress and promise as a number two overall pick. I stand corrected. They drafted Lonzo Ball at number two, but they have all of these young pieces. And like you said earlier, I believe off the air, or maybe it was on the air, but yes, LeBron raises that ceiling to places that this current team probably isn't capable of getting to on its own. But they're at least still promising enough to be relevant. Like the time of me covering, I've covered the Lakers basically since they've been terrible. So like the time of me covering a terrible Lakers team is probably behind us now. So thank goodness for that.
What do you just expect of this? We're going to get into the Cavs, and I want to hear your takes on this, because I think people that are listening to Locked On Cavs know sort of where I stand on a lot of this. But what are you expecting out of this process? Like this, to me, everything we're hearing is that it's going to be a pretty short LeBron process. The people that actually would know this are indicating that. It's not going to be, it's an average of like 7.5 days. The last two times he's made a decision, it seems like it's going to be a much quicker process this time. It seems like
analytics are getting out of control if we're talking seven.
Yeah. numbers are ruining sports. My column, nerds and their Excel spreadsheets. We're going to get someone's going to calculate a PR of Woj or something at some point. It's going to just be absurd. And does he get docked for not saying for his linguistic, jujitsu the other night? I don't know. Someone smarter than me would have to tabulate that. But this whole process to me is just going to be it's going to be, I think, really dramatic. And it's going to there's going to be the 3 days where we hear from LeBron, whatever his decision is. We hear from whoever goes to where he is or whatever. And then it's going to be quiet. I just can't imagine it's going to be really a lot. This is going to be the whole summer. And certainly for us, I think this is mostly true because other teams have other things are non-contention for LeBron. It really does feel like it's these two teams, but it seemed like to me, it's we're going to get this and then it's going to be very quiet otherwise.
Yeah, I think if he stays in Cleveland, you're absolutely right. And it's mostly because of how limited the Cavs are in being able to surround him with much more talent beyond that, right? Maybe you add a couple veteran minimum guys. And this was one of the other things we were talking about, is that whoever gets LeBron, or if in the Lakers' case, if they get LeBron and Paul George, there's going to be a ton of value out there across the league because of how little cap space there is across the league. So if he stays in Cleveland because of kind of how limited Kobe Altman is in his abilities to improve the team, I think it's the focus shifts squarely to, what is Colin Sexton capable of? Is Jordan Clarkson worth hoping that he turns it around, or do you see what you can get, not just by trading him, but maybe opening up a little bit more cap flexibility? How good can Larry Nance Jr. be, or do you see if he's a piece that you can maybe move and bring back more immediate help or more help that you're more confident in for LeBron? So In that case, I think you're right. But if LeBron comes to LA, the number of it's always bananas. Lakers off seasons are always bananas because I wind up having to aggregate all kinds of stuff that I know isn't true.
Yeah, TMZ's in LA. TMZ does not have an office in Cleveland.
Yeah, the teams use the Lakers for leverage for everything. Freaking Mitchell Robinson, who was a complete unknown heading into the draft, his agent tried to use the Lakers as leverage and floated out there that he was trying to, or that the Lakers had promised him that they were going to take him, right? And as that was all going on, I and just about everybody out here knew, that doesn't quite sound right. That's not a position of need for the Lakers right now. And despite that was still going on, if you throw LeBron into that mix and potentially Paul George, and maybe the Kawhi stuff takes a step further, if Kawhi finds out that LeBron and Paul George are teaming up in LA, and there's a way for the Lakers to be able to potentially trade for Kawhi, those rumors are going to dominate the offseason. So I think if he stays in Cleveland, it'll be relatively quiet by LeBron standards. But if he comes to LA, just look out. I'm already planning on not having a life for two or three weeks.
Yeah, if you want to let people know what your Venmo ad is so they can just send you coffee money, I think that would probably be smart. Just pull a Harrison and put it in your Twitter bio or something.
Yeah,
but
or I Harrison's more the coffee guy. I'm more the whiskey guy. Oof. That's why my articles tend to be more fun.
Silver Screen and Roll, brought to you by whiskey. What's your whiskey brand of choice, though? It's the real question.
I just had a that I can't walk at the moment, but I got this Japanese whiskey. I'm Mexican. My mom or my not my mom. My wife is German, and because Mexico beat Germany, we put like a $20 bottle on the line. For her, it would be champagne. For me, whiskey. And I got this Japanese bottle on sale, and it's freaking delightful. It's really, really good. Japanese whiskey in general. Like, if you're a whiskey drinker, go after that stuff. It's really good.
Yeah, shout out to Japanese whiskey. But for the Cavs, it's like the thing that I would expect them to do is, like, I think Kemba Walker will be the name that comes up again, right? Like, and I think even for the Lakers, like, if they want to, like, go all in on something, like, very short term, like, that sort of makes sense too. But Kemba is, like, the thing. And, like, I think even, like, CJ McCollum would draw more fanfare for the Cavs. I think, you know, obviously you're maybe taking on like a Nick Batum contract or like Marvin Williams, and there's certainly something not great about taking on that kind of money when Kemba has 1 year. And look, it's possible LeBron could do a one-on-one deal again, right? Like, I don't think we even know right now and can say with certainty that we know he's gonna say, okay, I'm gonna go sign 5 years with the Lakers, or I'm gonna sign 5 years with the Cavs. Like, he could just say, I'm gonna do one-on-one and yeah, do this again next year.
Like, well, I especially think he does one-on-one in Cleveland.
Like, I think I've come around to that. I've really started, and like that's tough. But if you're the Cavs, you do it. You 100% do it. It's LeBron freaking James.
Yeah, I just look. You know more than me. You obviously pay way closer attention to that than I do. But I just never get the sense that he fully trusts Dan Gilbert with 5 years of his career. You know, that like he would just sign up and say, yes, you have me for 5 years. We'll see how this turns out.
I'm not sure he trusts anyone for 5 years.
That's for sure. If there is somebody, though, that he would trust, I think it might be Magic because of the similar stature in the league and legacy wise. But I think even if he comes to the Lakers, I think he signs like a 1-1 deal or maybe a 2-1 deal, just so that might convince, say, a Paul George or somebody else to stick around a little bit longer. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that played a factor with Kawhi or with Kyrie, right? That he was just kind of sick of, like, all right, I don't know if LeBron's going to be here next year. I don't know what's going to happen next year. I don't know what's going to happen 2 years from now, right? Like, that has to wear thin on the organization and with stars that would hopefully or potentially be signing up to play with him. You never know.
It's complicated because, like, LeBron, as far as we know, like, he didn't like the Kyrie trade. He didn't exactly do as far as we know, and I think he's admitted to this, like, didn't really call Kyrie. Like, you know, didn't really, like, make the pitch to say Kyrie stay. He also, like, the Cavs, I understand people's frustration with the Cavs. Like, I get it. But if I can, like, at least, there are things that they've done in the past that obviously I think don't make sense. Like the Lakers deal, I don't love giving up that pick. I get it, but I don't think it was great. I think you look at something like the what they've had to do the last couple of years in prioritizing the future asset, you know, not necessarily going all in on certain guys, picking Jetty Osman over Jamal Crawford last summer on a smaller scale. The Cavs are operating in this world where they are trying to make sure they are not ending up like they were last time, that they're not going to be in the situation where they had to get really lucky to get Kyrie, to get Tristan, you know, to get the pick that turned into Wiggins, that turned into Kevin Love, you know, to get the pick that was Bennett. Like, they got another number one pick and they botched that one, but like they had another number one pick. You know, they missed in waiters and they still got lucky and they had LeBron come back. Like, all they got really lucky. I don't think they want to be in that situation again. I think they want to be able to have young talent. I think the other side of it is, like, if LeBron gave them a 5-year commitment, I think you would see Gilbert and Allman be more likely to start flipping things. You know, maybe they don't trade every young guy. You know, it wouldn't shock me if, like, they flipped Jetty or Zizic and not Sexton, or, like, kept Jetty and, like, traded the other guys, because I don't think they want to be completely barren. They're really playing up right now in their public appearances that they want to be in the player development business. That is something they have not done well since LeBron has come back. It's something I think they're trying to do better now, and I think good teams should be in that development business, even if you are in win now mode. I think there's a lot of value in it. I think that if they had that commitment, this would be different. But LeBron also doesn't owe that to them, right? I don't think he owes it to anybody. I think there's a weird thing in sports where we, like, expect to, we, like, in not us, but, like, I think sports fans inherently just expect players to sort of, like, give in to teams and just, like, it's sort of about the team. I sort of think it's the players should hold more power in this. It makes their, like, careers can be, make it messier and make it harder. But I also think it's the smart thing for them. Like, LeBron should not be just, like, willing away 5 years of his career if he doesn't trust the situation or if there's some discomfort there. Like, he just shouldn't do that.
I think it works for and against LeBron in some circumstances, and especially now. Like, prime LeBron, you do whatever you possibly can. And you could argue that he's still somewhat in his prime. You could argue that his, even the back end of his prime is going to be better than the vast majority of primes across NBA history, right? But as he gets to the, you know, the last chapter of his career, those one-on-one deals might actually work against him to a certain extent, because teams like the Cavs, like you're saying, if you're the Cavs, or if you, let's just say it's the Lakers, if you're the Lakers, do you trade Lonzo Ball and for Kemba and 1 year of LeBron and potentially only 1 or 2 years of Kemba, right? Like, do you go all in that regard? I think you do more often than not, but you think about it. And there was a time in LeBron's career when you didn't even hesitate to think about it. Like, there wasn't even a thought. And, you know, maybe for those holding out hope in Cleveland or out here in LA, that maybe he sticks around beyond a 1-on-1 deal or a 2-on-1 deal. Maybe there's some hope there that he recognizes this. And look, if the Lakers actually do get to have a meeting with him, one of the things that I'll be interested to see is that they come out of that meeting is what commitment is he willing to make to the Lakers? What commitment is he willing to make? Because a team with – you can call me crazy here if you want. I think that a team with LeBron, Paul George, and and the young core that the Lakers have, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, like Kyle Kuzma – a team with those pieces has a higher ceiling than a team that, you know, acquires LeBron and Paul George and then flips for more immediate help that you know what it is, but doesn't necessarily, but you don't, you kind of also know what they might be moving forward. And for the Lakers, like if you're really looking at it in terms of windows here, do you want the peak of how good your team is going to be to continue to coincide with how good the Golden State Warriors are? Or do you want to see if maybe you hold off on trading Lonzo or Brandon Ingram or Kyle Kuzma? Maybe you wait for a year and then you see what happens with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green in Golden State. And you see if you can maybe catch Golden State on the downswing while you extend your window and potentially still see an upswing. Like, you can call, you're more than welcome to call me crazy there, but I think there's something to that potential there. And I think, you know, and Cleveland was kind of put in a tough spot because they acquired LeBron at a time where they had so few assets, right? I think they acquired LeBron and they had Andrew Wiggins and they had Kyrie. Their cupboard beyond that was fairly bare.
Wiggins was the trade chip. You know, Deion ended up being something. You know, David Griffin got a lot out of the little they had at that deadline, and then, you know, they got Channing Frye later on with Varejao's contract. They used Haywood's contract, excuse me. But they didn't have a lot. Like, I mean, Wiggins was their ability to get Kevin Love. They were not getting Kevin Love that summer, which was a part of LeBron coming, or at least a comfort in him coming, was getting Kevin Love. And you don't get mm-hmm. him with Anthony Bennett and Deion Waiters. Like, that wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reality for him in both situations is he's probably best off in a situation where there's a mix of young guys that are going to keep getting better and maybe take some of the regular season burden off of him, and he can mentor and do these things, and veteran guys who can help right now. How you balance that is really, really hard because you have to have the right amount of money. LeBron and another max guy certainly make that really hard. You have to be a general manager and have a team that's willing to spend. I think in both cases, the Cavs have obviously spent a crap ton of money. The Lakers, I think, would print money. You know, I think they do print money even now. You can know that better than me.
Yep.
But Like, that is the reality. And I think both situations are interesting in that regard, because Brian Windhorst has talked about this, and it's like LeBron didn't necessarily expect to win his first year back in Cleveland. I think since then, like, he's wanted to contend and win, and I think even this year, like, game one hurt so much because he felt like that was an opportunity.
Yep. It was an opportunity.
And, like, he that happened. But, like, what does that different at 33? Like, and how does that play in the calculus? And, like, does, like, the Cavs do give him just, like, a lot of comfort that, like, I don't know if L.A. could. You know, it's not that L.A., like, wouldn't be willing to do it, but he's in L.A. And in Cleveland, he can, you know, like, be a little bit more private, and he can, you know, his kids can go to St. Mary, and like the Cavs like let them do that Napa Valley vacation, and they let him like go to Miami for a little bit. Like, would LA and the spotlight there allow for that same sort of freedom that he seems to enjoy at this point? Like, these are factors that like we just don't really know how they what they'd mean, or like what his opinion on them are right now, and maybe we don't really ever know. You know, it's possible like he just doesn't give those answers. I mean, Miami, going to Miami was, I'm going to win all these titles with my guys. Like, this is my best chance to win, and that was the pitch. Cleveland, it was, I'm coming home. It was the letter in Sports Illustrated. What is the reasoning now? Like, I just wonder what the single line elevator pitch for his move is this time, if he moves or if he stays. Like, what is the message he's sending after this? And I don't think we know that.
So, here's how I would put it. His very interest in the Lakers signals to me that he's interested in stuff beyond basketball, that he's looking to his career, his post-NBA career, right? He's made it known by several accounts that not only does he want to be the most wealthy basketball player ever, but he wants to be up there amongst the wealthiest people, period, ever. And I think his interest in the Lakers – now, I think it's twofold, and according to Windhorst, he has said that like he does want to contend for titles, and his decision will be made based off of the place that best equips him to win titles, which I you know, I'm biased again, but I still think it, because of how flexible the Lakers are, they are that team compared between them and Cleveland. But for a guy like LeBron, who is playing essentially in his hometown, his legacy out there is set. He won the title for Cleveland, the This Is For You title, like that. Everything, he's playing with house money out there, and playing with house money is fun. Like playing with house money at a casino is a lot of fun, but you can also kind of go through your house money. And there's the potential where he might look back and say, well, what could have been, not in terms of basketball, because I think his NBA career is extraordinary. But does he kind of look back if he sticks it out longer in Cleveland, does he look back and say, well, did I pass up on opportunities elsewhere? In this case, LA, potentially maybe Houston or Philly to a lesser extent. Does he look back and he say, well, what might have been, what could have been, that's where the sales pitch, or that's where I think he would be leaning. And that's the only reason really why I think he would be interested in the Lakers at all. Cause really they won 35 games last year. I think they're a promising team, but they won 35 games last year. No superstar goes from playing in a finals to a team that wins 35 games the year before. Like, that never happens.
Cavs, so 2013-14 Cavs won 33 games.
Well, but again, though, yeah. But that was for reasons beyond basketball. Yeah.
No, and I think now it's the same thing. I think you're right in saying, like, it is never as simple with LeBron. Like, it is never just as simple as thing. And by the way, Luol Deng involved in both these scenarios. Just want to point that out. Shout to Luol Deng.
Poor Luol Deng. Like somebody on Twitter the other day asked Silver Screen Roll if like, are they crazy for thinking that Luol might be useful in a situation with LeBron, like as like a stretch four? And it's just like, no, the Lakers wouldn't play him on a 35-win team when they had like seven warm bodies around. Like, poor Luol.
Channing Frye should just like immediately re-sign with the Lakers though if they get LeBron.
I think he will. Like, I think he and Luke Walton are really tight. And he was very good for the Lakers down the stretch of the season.
I also just, like, really enjoy him roasting the young guys. Like,
yeah.
I'm not, like, here for, like, the more interesting Lakers burns is not, like, Lonzo releasing a diss track about Kyle Kuzma, who is, like, no. Jeff Green 2.0. But, I gotta get, I just had it.
That's not right.
The rookie year stats don't lie, Anthony. But,
sure. But Jeff Green did that with Kevin Durant playing on his team, right?
Yeah, that's true. So. I'm very much here for, I'm very much here for Channing Frye just, like, roasting Lonzo Ball for wearing, like, weird pants. Like, I'm really here for that. But let's wrap it up on this.
Uh-huh.
This summer, if LeBron goes to the Lakers, like, if that happens, what is like, the thing that is not, like, maybe the obvious answer, maybe it is the obvious answer, but what's, like, the thing about that most fascinates you? Like, what is the aspect of LeBron in his decision if it's LA, and then I want to hear what your answer would be if it's Cleveland as well, like, that most fascinates you about why he made that decision?
Well, I'm interested to see, just because he is a brilliant business mind, right? Like, he's done really, really well for himself, not just in basketball and not just by leveraging his abilities on a basketball court, but from the standpoint of just making the right calls. So I'm really interested to see, like, which different, like, how he chooses to grow his roots in LA with the amount of money that gets moved around across the city. So that's really fascinating to me. But in terms of the NBA, like, I want to know how much weight LeBron still has, because we're, again, in my opinion, greatest basketball player in the history of the game, period. It's him. It's some order of him, Kareem, and Jordan. Those are the three guys, in my opinion. But he is nearing, not nearing the end, but he's nearing, you know, kind of like if he was playing a round of golf, he's on hole like 14 or 15, right? And I want to know how that moves the league. I want to know, all right, does he, by coming to LA, move everything, shift everything to where Paul George comes? The Lakers now have more leverage. Kawhi goes on the record for the first time ever, and the first thing he ever says in front of a camera is, I want the Spurs to trade me to the Lakers. Like, I want to know how many different things LeBron making this decision moves across the NBA. Because not to diminish where he currently stands, but the NBA has so much talent around that you could make the argument it's kind of sort of a bigger if like Kevin Durant decides he's going to leave the Warriors, that you could make an argument might be a bigger decision than LeBron coming to the Lakers, right? And I want to see if he can continue to just dominate, not just on the court, but in terms of narratives around the court. That's what I'm watching for.
I am into that as well. I think in both situations, there is something really interesting about what his decision means, about what it says. And, like, for the Cavs, I think the interesting part about it is just, like, that what would come next, because I do think there would be other shoes, and, like, what he says about it, and, like, if/when he says something about it. Like, if he goes to LA, I think we obviously get, like, a press conference. You know, like, he'll do a press conference at Staples Center, and LeVar will be there, and I will be really exhausted by all of it. But, if he stays in Cleveland, like, do we not hear from him until October, right? Like, do we get, like, maybe there's, like, a letter, again, and he doesn't say anything, or because he's not going to hold another, like, Akron event for this, like, right? Like, I don't think he would do that, you know?
I think he does, you know, anybody betting on anything other than him releasing his decision on uninterrupted is just lighting money on fire. So if you're doing that, please hit the aforementioned Venmo that Chris was talking about earlier. And send me whiskey money instead. That's a way better use of your funds. But I think if he stays in Cleveland, here's what I'd be really fascinated by with Cleveland is, does he take Sexton under his wing? Does he say, look, I'm going to be here. I want to get this guy started to be the next chapter of Cleveland basketball? Or does he use Sexton in any way, shape, or form as any kind of trade chip or any other young player for that? Chetty Osman, Larry Nance Jr., like, does he become invested in the Cavs, not just as a a platform by which he can attain his own greatness. But does he invest in the Cavs as an organization, as its own being, its own entity after he's done playing? That's the one knock I have on Kobe, is that I have yet to see that from Kobe. I want to see if LeBron does that with the Cavs.
I'm gonna hashtag Shabazz Napier watch, but like the LeBron's camp, like there was like reports that they like Colin Sexton, like mm-hmm. that was like their guy, and I'm like, okay, like we're not, don't play this game, like I'm not gonna listen to any of this, but like it's possible, like right, that he decided to do that, and like he I think Jetty grew on him over the course of the season, more than I would have guessed, you know, mm-hmm. and I do think like there is something about him that like would like to mold young talent. And I also just wonder if he delays his decision here. It's like something that we don't know, but it's like possible that his next big decision could be next summer. Because like, what if Paul George does a 1+1? What if Kawhi stays with the Spurs? Like, there's not really someone that he pairs up with this summer that gives him instant title contention. But what if that decision just gets pushed to next summer when things could get real wild and a lot more names are out there? I don't know. But like, what if him and like Kyrie's a free agent next summer. Klay's getting close. Like, there's all these things. Like, they're out there, you know? And I don't know what that means for both teams. I think the Cavs obviously are cool with the holding pattern. I don't know what it means for the Lakers this summer. But I think LeBron is going to set the tone for both of these teams. And then I think by extension, the rest of the league, in a summer where there's not a lot of money. And that in itself is, like, both really, really interesting to cover and, like, really stressful because you're just waiting for the yes. Noj notification at, like, you're, like, at dinner and you're just, like, I'm just trying to eat some pasta right now and have a glass of wine, and like the Cavs just like dumped Tyler Zeller's contract, like who knows.
Well, speaking of Woj, but like while we were recording, the Clippers just traded Austin Rivers to Washington for Marcin Gortat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's just all this stuff that we're not on our radar, and it's
I'm glad you made that point, because that was essentially what I was alluding to, is that there's so much stuff that we don't know about. There's so much stuff going on in the background that we have no. Hell, the Lakers picked Mo Wagner. Like, they were linked to all kinds of players, but nobody ever really seriously considered Mo Wagner.
Yeah.
And here they are.
Yeah, you took a Michigan guy when you're recording noted Ohio State Buckeyes fan LeBron James. I'm just saying, like, rough look magic. know your clientele. Like, do your tampering correct. I don't know. LeBron probably has, like, very little idea about who Mo Wagner is. But you can find Anthony on Twitter and Anthony Irwin. Send him money on Venmo. Read Silver Screen and Roll. Listen to Locked On Lakers. Anthony, this is going to be fun. I'm sure we're going to talk again if and when something crazy happens. But it's going to be a wild ride.
It really will be. And look. Like, here's how I kind of look at, you know, the off season, and like last night was the big award show, right? And here's how I kind of look at everything. It's like, I wouldn't, yes, doing nothing would be nice, but I wouldn't be doing anything. I'm just kind of like sitting around the house. Like, I don't mind covering this stuff because it's kind of fun to try to prognosticate and figure out the different scenarios on how this off season is going to go. LeBron off seasons are fun. They're stressful as all hell if you're the team that might lose LeBron. But for me, I guess I'm playing with the house money that I alluded to earlier with LeBron.
I am personally good with whatever comes.
You guys won a title.
Look, I'm here for just like, let me just get some interesting coverage, and I'm very curious to see like what the organization would do. It would be a test of the Cavs. There's going to be a next generation for them at some point. If it comes now, I'm kind of curious to see what it would be like. But we're going to find out. It's June 26th. Hopefully we find out before July 4th. That would be quite ideal. I have 2 days off of work those 2 days, and I'm very hoping that happens. But Anthony Irwin on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to Locked On Cavaliers for Wednesday, June 27th. Please go on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave that 5-star rating and review. That is the absolute best way to support the show. Thank you very much to everyone who listened and has already left those 5-star ratings and reviews. Thanks again to Anthony for coming on today's show. We're going to be back tomorrow with Jeff Siegel breaking down the Cavs' cap situation and all of the logistical issues they're going to face this summer with or without LeBron James. Again, find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. Find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.